Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Veterans Day edition of the Savage Nation. First, a moment of thanks to all of you currently serving in the United States military, both here and abroad. And we should say a moment of reflection for all of the tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands who have died to give us the freedom to be here today speaking with each other on the public airwaves. There's nothing more I can say other than thank you very much for your sacrifice and for giving me this opportunity and this freedom to be here, freedom that, of course, is being eroded on a daily basis. Today is a very special day in the Savage Nation because Herman Cain, who was featured on this program in August, will be joining us in the next hour on this program and is expected to discuss some very important topics with me on the show. And I will not give you a hint as to what may or may not occur, but they will be quite new. Let's put it to you that way. It's not just going to be fluff. I will tell you this, I'm not going to talk about the accusations. Point blank, not going to mention them because they're not real to me. Those are gold diggers. They don't even deserve the time of day, and I frankly think all of them should just slither into the darkness. Let's put it to you that way. There are other topics on the program today, many, many other topics, and I'd like to go to michaelsavage.com to initiate them. Here's the biggest story. It's a local one, but a national one, an implication. In Richmond, California, a mayor has snubbed Veterans Day to attend an Occupy rally. She is a far-left radical put in position by the vermin of Richmond, California, who hate the military, hate police, hate the family, hate the church, hate everything that is decent in America. And so, therefore, she is choosing to stand with the rats in the Occupy Oakland group. As far as I'm concerned, she should be the mayor of the Occupy Vermin group rather than the mayor of Oakland, Richmond, California. Mayor Gail McLaughlin, what did you do? What did you do to deserve to do this to your family name? She sent an email today to the San Jose Mercury News explaining why she would not be attending a Veterans Day salute that included a reenactment of the launch of a World War II era Liberty ship at the Richmond shipyards. I mean, I know these ships very well because I boat in the area. Listen to what this double-talking leftist vermin had to say. This is the kind of rhetoric that would come out of someone in the Obama czar cabinet, she said. I chose to honor our veterans, not only on Veterans Day, but daily, by supporting an end to a military warfare to prevent further fighting and dying in needless wars, said this slob. I am a strong supporter of veterans for peace and Iraq vets against the war, said the double-talking communist vermin. And she said, since the city is not sponsoring the Veterans Day salute, she chose to attend an Occupy rally, an event that she has been actively promoting. Well, it didn't go over very well with the veterans themselves, as opposed to the fake vets in Veterans for Peace and the fake Iraq vets against the war. Jeff Rubin, who organizes Pinole's Veterans Day Memorial, said, I think it's disgraceful. This is not a war issue. This is an issue of honoring people who sign up to protect your rights. Anyway, this mayor has ties to the far-left radical anti-American Richmond Progressive Alliance, and she is well known for her hatred of things patriotic. That's the sad state of affairs in America, that a mayor could choose to stab veterans in the back. Let's move on to the other stories that have made it up on the Savage Nation today. There are many others, and I remind you that it's open mic to Mike Day. On the program being Friday, of course, you can call in until Herman Cain arrives with any of your comments. One of the questions I have for you, for all of you who are listening to the program today, as you do every day, millions of people across America, As you well know, this is the third largest radio talk show in America. It is also number two in the nation, in case you haven't seen the good news. Number two in terms of web listeners. That's right. The younger demographic seems to see something of value in Michael Savage, and the ratings are up on michaelsavage.com. I think they got dropped already by my excellent webmaster, but it's up there somewhere it was. The fact is that the show is really highly rated on the web. I want to ask you a question. My novel, Abuse of Power, has been on the bestseller list for weeks since it was launched on September 13th. There are two or three sexually explicit scenes in Abuse of Power. I decided to ask this question today while we have some time before Mr. Kane joins us, because it's a very personal radio show, and I know many of you have bought Abuse of Power. Many of you intend to buy it for the holidays. Do you think that the sexually explicit scenes in Abuse of Power were offensive? Do you think the sexually explicit scenes do not belong in a popular novel of fiction written by a conservative? Do you think I should have self-censored and not written anything about the beauty of lovemaking, irrespective of your political orientation? Why would anyone object to a sex scene in a novel? I don't understand it. And yet I've had a few complaints. Why? Why should you complain? Jack Hatfield makes love with another character. She happens to be an adult woman. They're both consensual. They're both single. They're not cheating on anybody. Why is that wrong to put in a novel? I don't understand that. Now, it's true that in an earlier part of the book, his friend Tony Antinori, who is not the lead character, engages in S&M, BDSM with a certain younger woman, older man, younger woman, but he is revulsed by the woman's predilections, and he tells her he doesn't want to do that anymore. I personally am defending it, yes, because one of the characteristics of human beings is to enjoy sex, whether you know it or not. And so I intend to make certain that Jack Hatfield and his friends act as close to real people as they can in future incarnations. For those of you who have been supporting the vermin in New York and in Oakland, those who have disturbed the neighborhoods, polluted the neighborhoods, thrown fecal matter on the ground, urinated in bottles and shot each other, man shot to death near Occupy Oakland camp. In Salt Lake City, a junkie died in a tent. In Atlanta, tuberculosis has broken out. Can you believe what's going on? Tuberculosis breaks out at Occupy Atlanta. You know, as a public health professional, which I was professionally for many years, what would you expect to happen where a bunch of low-life animals lay in a tent, urinate and defecate near themselves, no running water, okay? What would you expect to happen when they're passing around bottles of wine and joints to each other? Would you expect disease not to spread around? How can you not understand that these people are retrograde throwbacks and they are a threat to the public health? And if we had a legitimate central government, they would have been closed down within a week of doing this. 1 week it would have been closed down. But we have no central government. We have no local government. The CDC has ceased to exist a long time ago. The CDC becoming only a front for radical leftist politics at least 20 years ago, because I worked in the health professions. Of course this is going on because we have no central government. We have government anarchy. Man fatally shot at Occupy Burlington, Vermont protest. One place after the other, you see society at its lowest. The degenerates are bringing society down to its lowest level, and we have no one stepping in to stop it. So having said all of that and told you where to find all the news that you'd like to find on michaelsavage.com, and you know that Herman Cain is expected to appear on this show in the next hour, I'm going to open it up to you right now, the audience of the Savage Nation, ask you one question. Here it is. What would you like me to ask Herman Cain on this show? Now, I will ask him anything, but I will not talk about the lying women. I will not talk about these lowlifes, these gold diggers. They're the most disgusting creatures I've seen in years, and I will not give them any standing on my program whatsoever. I will not feed into this monster of lies. I'll be right back.
Savage.
In honor of all of the veterans, past and present, we are celebrating Veterans Day in the Savage Nation. We are expecting Herman Cain, not momentarily, but in the next hour. Tell your friends, because I understand one thing, which is that Mr. Cain is so busy right now that he is not doing much radio, if any radio at all. And I have to tell you, this man is true to his word. And there are others who we supported who would not come on the show once they were launched into the national spotlight. And I don't have to mention her name. I mean, there's no need for me to mention her name. I'd rather it remain anonymous. But there's a certain female candidate who came on here and cried crocodile tears well over a year ago, saying Nancy Pelosi was out to get her. Nancy Pelosi was out to destroy her in Congress. And I sent her money, and my listeners sent her, I think, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And then she turned her back on us. And when I made the announcement that she turned her back on us, on the Savage Nation, guess what happened? Guess what happened? Yeah, that's what happened. Because, you know, see, this audience is a very loyal audience. It also represents the largest block, I believe, the largest block of independent voters that is attracted to any media show in America. I say that without any hesitation. Yes, Rush has a larger audience. Yes, the Wallbanger has a larger radio audience. But I don't think they represent the independent voter to the level I do. I think they both represent the Republican voter. Nothing wrong with that. I'm just telling you how it is. And they do hear who comes on and what they do afterwards, and they don't like two faces. And a two-faced person is not very popular anywhere on Earth, especially on the Savage Nation. And Herman Cain is as real as he looks. It's as simple as that. And if you like a man of character and a man of his word, it's Herman Cain. And there's no better proof of that than the fact that he'll be on the show again. It's that simple. There's nothing more that I have to say about it than that. Now I'll take your calls on what I should ask of Herman Cain and questions about Abuse of Power, my novel, and whether or not you feel that the sexually explicit scenes, there are only two of them, by the way, two or three in the whole book, were inappropriate. Remember, it's a fiction. It's a novel. John in New York, let's start on line three out of WOR. Go ahead, please.
Oh, hi. I was going to answer why some people might find it offensive, is that according to the Bible, sex outside of marriage is adultery. So that's why people might find it offensive. Obviously, if the person is not born again and does not have the Holy Spirit in him, to live that type of life would be impossible. It's near impossible.
Before we go there, this is not the novel is a novel. It's a work of fiction. It reflects real life.
Yes. Oh, yeah, it does reflect real life, but real life also often repulses people. So if you have a character acting in
a way... But I'm not writing a children's story for children. I'm writing a novel for grown-ups.
I know that, but I mean, there are characters are mirroring are the mirror of life, and they could be, if they're offensive in real life to someone, they'll be offensive in fiction.
No, I understand, but are you suggesting then that all adult fiction should not include any scenes that are not approved by the Bible?
No, not at all. But I'm just saying why people would be offended if they have the belief that...
Are you personally offended? Did you read Abuse of Power yet?
No, I haven't gotten a copy yet. I went to Union Square.
All right, thanks for the... See? Bingo. See? So I get some didn't even read the book. He's telling me he's offended by it. Cain question. New York, Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation. What would you like me to ask of Herman Cain?
Oh, thank you, Michael. God bless you and God bless our veterans. Michael, I've been on Herman Cain's website, and I cannot figure out, I assume he's pro-life, but I would like to hear it from his voice. I know you don't like to spend a lot of time on that issue, but it's vitally important to us.
It is vitally important to many people, and I agree with you. However, it's also the death knell for a candidate. I will tell you right now, if you want to destroy Herman Cain, put him on the spot with that question. Let me ask you something. Has any other candidate come out on this issue?
Yeah, Michael. Michelle Bachmann is clearly pro-life. Ron,
okay. Ron, and what? Wait, hold on. That's good. What about Mr. Romney?
He says he's pro-life, but his history. I believe his mother was very, very strongly pro-abortion. We feel he may have flip-flopped on the issue. We're questioning.
All right. I don't want to get trapped into that. It's a very good suggestion. I don't know that I can promise you that I will ask the question. Okay. I can't promise you that. 1-800-449-8255. What should I ask of Mr. Cain? Are you offended by the, I guess you've covered that scene. I mean, other than me reading it again, which I don't think I should do on a family show. The best scene occurs on page 250, where Jack gets so heated up in London that he falls off the bed and burns himself on the radiator, and he doesn't even feel it. I thought that was funny. I thought it was a great scene. May I read that to you without no sex, because the children listen to the show too. So Jack is blah, blah, blah with Sarah, right? And I don't know where the radiator scene is. It's quite good, actually. Oh, here it is. As he drew her nearer and removed her T-shirt and panties, she began to... I can't say that. In the midst of their heat, such a state of abandon was reached that the normally voyeuristic Jack, who liked to watch himself make love, actually fell from the bed onto the hot radiator. But like the Indian fakirs, who can be on a bed of nails without later showing puncture marks, Jack did not scorch or burn, nothing visible remaining except a small soreness days later. I think that's excellent. I mean, when have you read of a man so enraptured in such a situation, he falls off a bed, burns himself and doesn't feel it, and then put into a semi-comic mode like that? I think it's excellent. Looking at it, I'm not going to withdraw from that. And I can promise you this, the next novel will be even more explicit. So if you're offended by it, I apologize in advance, but it's going to be a signature of the books that my characters tend to be real. So otherwise, they're not real with regard to their adventurism. They're not real with regard to their patriotism. They're not real with regard to their passions in any other way if they're not real with regard to their sexuality. It's as simple as that. That's how I see the world, by the way. Either you are on or you're off. And if you're on in all ways, you're on in all ways. Otherwise, you're off in all ways. That's pretty good. But okay, let's go on to the Kane. What's the best Kane caller here? Indianapolis, Monty, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, thank you first for your political wisdom over the years from a currently serving U.S. Army soldier. I would like
to know
from Mr. Kane his opinion of President Obama's Supreme Court picks and what Mr. Kane would look for in a Supreme Court nominee.
Very, very excellent question. I'm sure he would not pick a far-left hack who worked on some of the very issues she's going to sit in the judgment of. Particularly people who are unqualified by any standard of the past. You know that Kagan was not qualified. We know that. That's my opinion. I can assure you of one thing: he's not going to nominate me to the Supreme Court.
Sure.
But because you're a veteran and you're serving, I'm sending you a free gift for the holidays to make your turkey stuffing even better. I'm sending you a free copy of Abuse of Power, my blockbuster novel from St. Martin's Press. Cook it at 450 and then turn off the heat.
Savage.
A good luck day around the world. Again, we salute all veterans past and present on the Savage Nation. And today is a very special Veterans Day, the 11th day of the 11th month of 2011. Around the world, people are celebrating the triple convergence of 11s, with marriages in particular. In China, a special 11-11 train started at 11:11 a.m. on the number 11 line in Shanghai. In New York, 11 Occupy protesters threw up on 11 others, and 11 politicians ran out of town as fast as they could. 1-800-449-8255. What I would ask Mr. Kane would be, which departments would you eliminate, if any? I mean, that's a, you know, a continuation of Perry's answer. Perry's answer was pretty interesting. I guess by his answer with regard to the third department, he meant no third department is what you could say. But why go into that again? He fundamentally has blown it. So it's really left to two front runners now, which is Romney and Kane. I give no credence to the Newt surge. I think Newt is a retread. I'm nothing against him personally. I don't know the man, but I don't believe an old white fat man who has been around too long in the Beltway is going to unseat Obama. Let me be very clear. Now, if the Republicans should pick him, God forbid, it will just show you once again that the Republicans have snatched defeat from the jaws of victory, as has been said many times. It's going to be hard enough to get Romney to win if he's picked, because he will not excite the conservative base. Everyone knows that who listens to this show. Again, I think Romney is a superb individual, wonderful family, looks presidential. I would certainly trust him more than I do Obama on virtually any issue, but that's one man's opinion, and I don't think that the base is going to vote for a Romney. Perhaps the conservative Tea Party base would come out to a 40th or 50th percentile and vote for Romney, but the race is going to be very close in some areas. Now, just going ahead, and I don't want to get so far ahead of myself, there's very bad news for Mr. Obama in some of the early returns. In Virginia, for example, there was a tremendous loss to the Obama campaign, which they're trying to wipe away and say it doesn't matter. But this is an area that he won in 08 for the first time in a very long time. And in the most recent election, the Democrats took a terrible bath. And every politician in Virginia did everything they could to distance themselves from Obama. They all said they had nothing to do with him. They don't know him. They have no idea who. These are Democrats. We don't know who he is. We never saw the president. We have nothing to do with him. We didn't vote for Obamacare. Although we're Democrats and we know there's a Democrat in the White House, we don't know his name. We never met him. He never was here. We heard his name is Barack Obama, but we have nothing to do with him. So therefore, they're running away from the president. That's not a very good sign in that it's reputed that Virginia is going to go back to the Repubs. But again, I don't want to make this a Repub-Dem show because I generally don't do that. It's too far ahead of the election, incidentally. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I have an interesting question for you, the audience. Leave a few lines open for this. Let's assume that Romney is selected and Romney wins the presidency. Let's just jump the clock, okay? We go to a Clockwork Orange scenario, and Romney wins. God knows what the Democrats will do if they see he's about to win. I wouldn't put anything past them. But let's say Romney wins, and Romney says, I'm going to pick Herman Cain to run one of the departments in the United States of America. You, the audience of the Savage Nation, which department do you think Herman Cain would best be suited to run? I know which one I would pick. You've got to remember, I'm the first one in the media who elicited the fact that Mr. Cain had a real degree in mathematics for a bachelor's degree, and then a master's in computer science, and then he worked as a civilian in the Defense Department analyzing the ballistics of various and sundry projectiles, which is very complicated stuff. As someone trained in science, I got to tell you that what he did was not easy. Don't underestimate Herman Cain, whatever you do. Don't fall into the rut of the pot-smoking lunatics on the left who think that because he speaks differently than they do, he's not quite as smart as the slick talkers from Sunset Boulevard. You know, let's just understand something here. Just because you wear a sharp suit and someone makes your Windsor knot for you doesn't mean that you know what you're talking about. So which department do I think he would most qualify to run? I would tell you right now which one I would like to see him run if he ever wanted to go there. I don't think he would accept this question, by the way. I would think he'd make a phenomenal defense secretary. And the reason I say that is because he knows how to crunch numbers, amongst other things. And I'll give you another reason. If Herman Cain walked amongst the troops, they would be invigorated. They'd be excited. They would salute him. They would love this man. They don't quite feel that way about Leon Panetta. I can guarantee you they don't get that little tingle up their spine when Leon Panetta shows up. So that's number one. I think he would inspire the troops. I think he would know how to trim the budget of all the fat, which is exactly why the powers that be would never let him near the budget of the Defense Department. Perhaps one of the biggest pork barrel departments in the history of the world. As you well know, I'm a strong supporter of defense, but not a strong supporter of corrupt contractors. And it's very difficult to know how long this country can go on with so much corruption in the military contracting world. So let's go to the callers on the Savage Nation. There's many good ones out there. New York, Walter, WOR calls. Go ahead. What's on your mind, Walter?
The thing I'm asking is, would Cain bring jobs back from Japan, back from China, back to the United States where they belong, which they've stolen from us over the years? Because I've been in the defense contract side of it, and I can't believe that people are losing their jobs left and right over this.
That's, you know, what percentage of our military equipment is made in China and in other countries? You probably know better than I do. There's probably not a single large component of the U.S. military that's wholly made in the United States. That's an absolute fact of reality. Foreign suppliers control elements of our fighter jets and our ships and our tanks and our big guns, which if they cut off the supply of various and sundry components, they could cripple our military. I ask you, is this not treason?
I absolutely agree with you. I don't disagree, and I just, that's one of the questions that, to me, to the people that want jobs in this country that have had them stolen away from them, that we should.
Well, I'll give you an answer. Since Herman Cain is not here to answer it, I'm going to give you an educated guess as to what I would do. You want to hear it? Because it's nothing new to this show. The first thing I would do is make certain that all defense components, all defense-related materiel is made 100% in the United States of America where possible, except for rare earths. I don't see why anything can't be made here. Why in the hell should we have to manufacture components for our military equipment in any other country? We are still a great manufacturing base. Just because Bill Clinton let the Chinese buy factories whole and take them to China doesn't mean we can't rebuild the factories here. And just because Jeffrey Immelt of General Electric has just taken an X-ray technology unit that has been up in Wisconsin or Minnesota for the last 125 years and decided to send it to China doesn't mean that X-ray unit can't be brought back to America. That's number one. Any military parts must be made in America by American companies, not by front companies for any third world nation. That's number one. You want to see a jolt in the arm of America? That's one. Two, 20% tariffs on all China goods. Why do I say it? Because I wrote it in Trickle Up Poverty. Donald Trump, who is a very successful businessman, also has proposed such a thing because he knows we're being eaten alive by every other country on earth. There's no such thing as free trade. How could you buy that rubbish? This lie put out by Bill Clinton, then picked up by George Bush, is perhaps the greatest lie in the history of trade warfare. There is no free trade. You go try to export a product to a third world nation, and you'll find out whether there's free trade or not. You'll find out that every country on earth, third world, second world, first world, has a tariff if you're a U.S. manufacturer. But they can bring any of their products into this country without any tariffs. Why? Because they can buy the biggest lobbyists in town for the lowest possible price. You've got people like Madeleine Albright, a shame upon her name until the 90th generation of the Albrights, who is a paid lobbyist for the China government. You've got even an ex-war hero, Bob Dole, now working as a lobbyist, the last I checked, for the Chinese government. You've got Sandy Soxberger, caught stealing secrets out of the National Archives, a lawyer, a lobbyist for China. How many other former officials are lobbyists for China and other countries working, in my opinion, not in America's best interest? How many? Can you name them? What kind of country survives that permits a top official like a State Department Secretary of State Albright to go to work for China? How is that possible? How can a country even perceive that this is rational? It's impossible to perceive. But she has the help of the people in the midstream media, where she goes around after she gets through lobbying for China. She goes on their shows and gives her opinions on this and opinion on that. She has no opinions that are valid. Not when she's working for China, she doesn't. At least that's one man's opinion. And if you think I'm a Sinophobe, you're wrong. I am actually a Sinophile. I'm Sinophilic. I always have been. Look it up. And I'm not talking about a sinus infection. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Now we read that they're throwing, this is horrible on Veterans Day, that the Defense Department discarded parts of bodies of deceased soldiers in a dump. Here is Leon Panetta on Dover bodies mishandled. I can't believe it. Listen.
We are making it a priority here at the department to ensure that our departing service members are given the support they need to pursue higher education, to find a job, and to start a business. These profound obligations to service members continue at every stage to include ensuring the recovery and dignified return of our fallen heroes. This is one of the department's most sacred responsibilities. And that's why all Americans, including myself, are justifiably disturbed by the reports of mismanagement at Doverport Mortuary that came to light this week. None of us will be satisfied until we have proven to the families of our fallen heroes that we have taken every step possible to protect the honor and dignity that their loved ones richly deserve. Having been to Dover, I consider this a sacred place with a sacred responsibility, and it is a place that must meet the highest standards for caring for the remains of our fallen heroes.
What are you going to say? I can't get sarcastic and say he knew about it. I'm sure he didn't. These are lower-level people who could care less about bodies the way goes on in other, you know, burial sites in America. I mean, we have relatives who have been, mishandled. We've all seen it. We're living in a different time than, the 1950s. It's not that time where people wouldn't do certain things that you could, unimaginable. virtually anything you can imagine has been done, is being done, and will be done. So to see that some guys did this to fallen, you know, body parts thrown into a dump, unheard of. But why is it the person who did this is not arrested? I'm glad Leon Panetta is offended that the report came out that at the Dovahport mortuary, remains of U.S. service members were discarded in the most despicable fashion. Why didn't he go to the next step and say, and the individual in charge of that mortuary will be dismissed and his pension seized, and he's going to face criminal charges? Why? This, to me, is like the Penn State scandal, because the guys at the top protect the other guys at the top. They think that they're all supposed to be insulated, and there's never supposed to be any ramification for any misgivings, misdoings, or outright criminality. Take Stephen Chu, at the Secretary of Energy. We all know that the Solyndra scandal is only one of many. We all know that green energy is a fraud. We all know that green energy is the new scam. It's like the recycling of today. You know, you say green energy, and here's $1 billion. $1 billion, $900 million to this one, $900 million to Nancy Pelosi's brother-in-law. Are you kidding me? And all these contracts came out of the Energy Department from this pinhead, or shall I say this microcephalic Stephen Chu. I don't care that he's a physicist with a Nobel Prize. That doesn't mean he's a good manager. He might be a brilliant physicist, and I'm not so sure he is, okay? Because I'll tell you something I've learned along the way, that not everyone who wins a Nobel Prize is a genius. They're very good politicians, and they have very good protexia all the way up the line. You ask anybody in science if I'm making this up. Who wins a Nobel Prize is about as important as who wins an election. Not necessarily the best man, but that's a topic for another day. So Stephen Chu is a horrendous manager, and if all of these fraudulent contracts went out under his watch, and Obama's got to throw someone under the bus, it's going to be Stephen Chu. Mark my words, it's coming. They need to get rid of somebody, and it's going to be him. And you think, now so you say, oh, good. Oh, good? Now tell me something. All those billions of dollars in fraudulent contracts, lost contracts, $500 million to the Solyndra contract that the FBI is investigating, don't know where the money went. Tell me why nobody goes to jail. Tell me why he doesn't lose a government pension. Tell me why he's not indicted for fraud. I mean, where does the buck stop? The buck stops nowhere. Harry Truman said the buck stops here. Under Obama, it's the buck stops nowhere. Nobody is culpable for anything. Now, that leads us to the next question. Do you think that Herman Cain would say the buck stops here? I get the feeling he would. I get the feeling that he would say, yes, I would take charge of all of these things. And I'm going to ask him some of these questions. We're not going to have a lot of time. You know, we might have 10 minutes, and there's only so much we can do. Reno, Nevada. Diane, fire away. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I'm reading Abuse of Power right now, and I love it. And I wanted to tell you that my husband passed away 2 years ago, and we were married for 36 years.
Right.
He was a wonderful husband and a great lover. And I think you're a fantastic writer. And when I read the scene on page 55 of Jack's Dream with the Czech woman,
yes,
I thought that it was beautifully written. And it reminded me of my husband making love to me, and it made me so happy.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm very sorry in a way. I mean, I'm happy for you, but I'm sorry that you're feeling such loss, okay?
But that okay. Just helps you read things like that.
Well, thank God, Diane, that you made that call. First of all, you touched me with your sincerity, number one. But number two, you know, this is what a normal woman thinks about a lovemaking scene, as opposed to someone who didn't even read the book and says, don't put it in there. How could you have a novel without a reality scene of lovemaking?
That's right. It was great. So you should keep those scenes in your future books.
All right. Thank you, sweetheart. I really appreciate it. That was beautiful. See, people don't know what real love is until you hear it. That was real love. You actually heard the voice of a woman who loved her husband. That was the most uncynical woman call I've ever had in the history of my 17 years on, or eight, I don't know how many years it is already on radio. I've had wonderful women call the show. I mean, amongst my 7 to 9 million, we don't know how many listeners, I have 32 women who listen to this show. And of all the 30 women who have called the show, that was the most sincere call I've ever had with regard to men. What are we going to talk about now, my God? Well, in the next hour, it's TikTok time, because that's when Mr. Cain makes his appearance, and he faces not the nation. We have a show called Face the Nation. And, of course, that's a stooge show where no real questions are permitted. It's moderators along the lines of the type we have seen. This is Face the Savage Nation. And if you have questions you'd like me to ask of Mr. Cain, frankly, I think him just coming on the show says about as much as you need to know about him. Because others have been on this show and then wouldn't come back on the show once they got too big, they thought, which is crazy, just utterly crazy. Because how are they going to win if they don't appeal or don't continue to appeal to the independents out there? And I think my show has an awful lot of Democrats who are independent, awful lot of Republicans who are independent, and a lot of independents who are truly independent who listen to this show. Of all the talk radio shows, I'd have to tell you, I think I have the largest number of Democrat independents, or shall I say moderate Democrats who are not too happy with the direction the country has taken under the Marxist president that we currently have, who fooled them. He faked them out. They had no idea what they were getting. Believe me, they had no idea what they were getting. I tried to warn them in trickle-up poverty, by the way, and they didn't listen to me. We got time for one last call, caller in this hour, then we're coming back on the Savage Nation. Let's go quickly to New York. Greg in New York on WR. Go ahead, please. What's your question for Mr. Cain?
Wonderful that you got this guy in your show. And we need to know from him, what is he going to do about China? You had Donald Trump on weeks back talking about what Donald would do about China. We got to hear what he's going to do about China. Michael, you are a student of history, and do you know how this country was funded? How was our federal budget funded prior to 1913?
Well, I do know where you're going. I know about the Federal Reserve, but you're going to lose the listeners if you go back to the federal banks, the Federal Reserve banks and the Federal Reserve. I think it's important enough to focus on how China has fundamentally taken over the control of our economy. And what we must do in order to regain our sovereignty. I think that's the most important question. As Rothschild said, give me control of a currency and I control the nation.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation, we are expecting a Herman Cain to arrive within the hour, and whether we have time for questions will be determined. I don't think so. But if you have a question you'd like me to ask of Herman Cain, give us a call here at 1-800-449-8255. I want to remind you of something. I wrote a book called Trickle Up Poverty back last year. It's out in paperback, but I'm referring to it for a specific reason other than to sell books. The end of the book has a Savage Manifesto on borders, language, culture, and economics. And I put out a 37-point plan. Now, you can dismiss it if you wish, but dismiss it at your own cognizance, because 200,000 people or 250,000 people bought this book in hardcover, which means that at least triple that read the book. In paperback, it'll probably approach a much larger audience. And so, therefore, there's a lot of people who agree with Michael Savage. And here's a preface to what I'm going to say to you before I read you my manifesto of what I think needs to be done by any candidate. Any candidate who wins should enact some or all of the following programs. And I want to preface it with this particular paragraph, which is very controversial, but unfortunately was prescient in that it's become more apparent to me that it's true than when I wrote it. Page 303. Every time this president can't have his way through the legitimate prescribed constitutional process of passing laws, he bypasses it. He is not an emperor who can do whatever the heck he wants. In spite of his delusions of grandeur, Barack Obama's Marxist-Leninist view of America, his hard-left march towards socialism, his spread-the-wealth-around nonsense, and his disregard for our Constitution must be stopped. How can we keep America from becoming financially, morally, and ethically bankrupt? How do we retain our place as a shining light to the world? Conservative patriots must return America to the core principles that made this country great, using both the contract from America coupled with the sensible, doable solutions found in the Savage Manifesto. And here they are. One, English only. Now, I won't read anything underneath the first few words unless I need to. One, English only. How's that? Does that work for you? Make English the official language of the United States. Require all who immigrate to our country to begin immediately to learn English as part of the requirement to qualify for the privilege of American citizenship. Likewise, require voting ballots to be written in English only. Now you say, well, why would you start with language before economics? Because the glue that holds a nation together is its language. Unless there's a common language, there's no commonality between the people. And I, as the son of an immigrant, will tell you this. Every one of my ancestors learned English. They didn't throw away their past. They didn't throw away their traditions. They didn't throw away their religion. They didn't throw away their ethnicity. But they became Americans. Today, ask yourself. Ask yourself why you have to press one for English in your own country. Ask yourself why so many politicians have raced to make this a bilingual, trilingual nation. In San Francisco, a ballot is printed in more than 10 languages. Why? To make sure that as many illegal aliens as possible will vote for the socialists in the city of San Francisco. Two, close the borders. Three, defend the borders. Pull the troops out of Germany and put them where they're really required. Pull them out of South Korea where they're doing nothing and put them on our southern border where there's a real threat to our citizens. Four, defund and repeal Obamacare. Remember how the Schechter brothers overturned FDR's socialism? Sue on the grounds of religious freedom. Use Schechter brothers' strategy from Chapter 5. Reduce the size and scope of government. The federal government is bloated. With the exception of the military and defense, reduce all departments in size by 4% each year for a total reduction of size by 16% over 4 years. Now, this is a little different than Mr. Perry saying he would eliminate three departments entirely. I would say reduce the size of every department and then go from there. Require government employees to speak English and to have achieved at least a high school diploma. I don't have to tell you how many of them don't speak English at all and have no high school diplomas. Six, liquidate TARP. Seven, oil for illegals. Eight, strike down the Anchor Babies Law. Nine, export jailed illegal aliens. I didn't say export all illegal aliens, did I? Hear me clearly. Export jailed illegal aliens. Our federal, state, and local jails are overcrowded with 2.3 million inmates as of 2008. Of that number, 29% are illegal aliens. They don't even belong here, yet we're paying an average of $29,000 per year to house, feed, clothe, and entertain them. Send them back to their country of origin. Use profiling to prevent terror attacks. Shall I repeat it for you? Use profiling to prevent terror attacks. Every policeman and detective in America knows that that works. It's the only thing that works. The way it works is because it works because it identifies who's liable to perform the crime, idiot. 12, name the enemy. 13, rewrite the rules of engagement for our troops. 14, save the SEALs. Stop prosecuting our Navy SEALs and other military personnel for doing what needs to be done to subdue our radical Islamist enemies. You can't fight a war in ballet slippers. We must stop requiring that our soldiers do a plié before they ask the enemy if he'd consent to being handcuffed and taken away. How's that for plain common sense? Does that work for you? That's 14 points. There are many, many others. 18, impose tariffs on China. We must draw a line in the sand with regard to China in order to loosen their stranglehold on our economy by imposing a 20% tariff on all goods produced in China. The tariff should be raised by 5% each year that China refuses to revalue its currency. That's pretty clear. You don't have to go to a Wharton School of Economics to understand that that would work. 19, offer health savings plans. 20, institute a flat tax. Simple. How's that? All Americans above the poverty line should pay the same percentage of income tax, a straight 15% across the board for individual earners. This would simplify the complex tax code and the unfair practice of tax discrimination, since 47% of U.S. households pay no federal income tax. Did you hear that? 47% of U.S. households pay no federal income tax. I'm reading from Trickle Up Poverty, The Savage Manifesto. I've got a few more minutes to keep this going as we wait for Herman Cain. 21, keep the estate taxes at zero. George Bush was right to eliminate the so-called death tax, the confiscatory practice of taxing the inheritance money passed from parents to children upon the parents' death. In 2011, this tax will jump from 0 to 55% on estates with assets valued between $1 and $10 million unless the Bush tax cuts are renewed. You'll say, well, what do I care about the rich? Well, it's not your money to take from them. That's why. That's why. In other words, you don't understand something. Money that is passed on to children has already been taxed at least once, if not several times. Why should the government now come in and take more of that money? It's unheard of. 22, say no to VAT tax. 23, reduce pay and pensions for civil servants. Why is New York City, for example, paying a $240,000 tax-free disability pension per year for a former fire chief? Why do almost 2,000 House of Representatives staffers take down six-figure incomes? How can 43 of them soak the public for $172,500, which is three times the median U.S. household income, in this down economy? Okay, this is number 23 of Savage's Manifesto. So if you think it's all fun and games here, I suggest you look into some of the plans I have. 24, defend the Defense of Marriage Act. 25, encourage childbearing among tax-paying citizens. What's that mean? Create a marriage incentive through lower taxes for married heterosexual couples and a tax credit for each child conceived and carried to birth. Increase the subsidies for each year the couple remains married. You want to support marriage? Put your money in the pockets of those who remain married. You want to support families? Support families with lower taxes on families. How's that? 26, make abortions illegal. 27, end affirmative action. 28, limit welfare benefits. 29, voting reform. Require a government-issued photo ID, such as a driver's license, at the ballot box when voting. While this doesn't provide proof of citizenship, it eliminates the Acorn-style fraud of registering dead people. 30, fire Obama's czars. 31, 32, reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act. This is probably one of the most important ways we could control the gangsters on Wall Street. Not all members of Wall Street are gangsters, but there are certainly members of Wall Street who are worse than the five families of organized crime in terms of the amount of money they've stolen. What is the Glass-Steagall Act? Why did Bill Clinton eliminate it? What would it do for you? I can't summarize it all in 1 minute or less. It's on page 307 of Trickle Up Poverty. Here's another one for Wall Street. Reinstate the Wall Street uptick rule eliminated by George Bush. Super important. 35, encourage risk-taking and entrepreneurship. 36, institute tort reform. What is that? Tort reform must be instituted for medical malpractice to curb frivolous lawsuits by the briefcase mafia and stop out-of-control awards for damages. Medical liability should be capped at $250,000 per claim. This has worked in California, where it was introduced in 1978. If passed, tort reform legislation will reduce the legal industry's inordinate influence in raising medical costs. Well, there are others in my manifesto. I think I've given you an awful lot in 10 minutes. It can all be found in Trickle Up Poverty. Whether you have a copy or not, you can buy one in soft cover right now. I'll be right back. Is the one and only Savage Nation. We're only minutes away from our interview with Mr. Herman Cain on the Savage Nation. And I've given you my 37-point program on my own now. It has nothing to do with him. Don't assume that I'm saying that these are points he agrees with. He may or may not agree with some of them or all of them. I have no idea. I'm not going to ask him. We don't have the time for all of that and give anyone a litmus test. It's my book, okay? I'm not running for office. I told you years ago that I would never run for office, although I watch these debates and I ask myself why I hadn't. I would never stand there like a stooge. First of all, I wouldn't submit to these debates and permit a leftist moderator to ask me a question. I would put them on the defensive. That's the first thing I would do. But I have told you before, I think the Republican Party is committing Harry Caray by agreeing to all of these debates, and I was right. Look what happened to Perry. There was no excuse for him to go into all of these debates. Who's advising them? I don't understand this. At a certain point, you got to say enough is enough. We'll see you in 6 months. It's enough already. Why are they subjecting themselves to this? And while Obama gets to fly off to Bali on another vacation, why don't you put him on a podium and ask him questions? You know, I'd like to see equal time for the Democratic president. Oh, I know he's too busy flying to Bali to answer them. But there's many questions that need to be answered right now. That the very brave men and women of the American press corps, the fifth estate, or the fifth column rather than the fourth estate, refuse to ask of the president. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to New York. Edward, WOR, go ahead, please.
Michael, I wish you would ask Herman Cain if he would move the United States out of the UN and also move the American embassy to Jerusalem and recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
Well, that's a tough one. That would be quite a question. Where does Romney stand on Israel?
I don't think anyone's ever specified where they stand, but Congress passed a law to move the American embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, and every president has violated it. Bush violated it, and now Obama's violating it. I wonder if he would obey the law, and United States does not recognize Jerusalem.
Here's the problem right now. Israel's in a very tough place, probably the toughest place it's been since its creation when it was attacked by five Arab nations. And it's so incendiary right now that I would not wish to throw lighter fluid onto a fire, which is what it would be doing. I mean, if I were to ask a candidate a question of the type you're asking, how can he win with that one? Well, I mean, what's the correct answer?
Well, and then the UN, I'd like to see him get the U.S. out of the UN.
I think there's great sentiment in America to eliminate the UN because it doesn't work. It's very much like the League of Nations after World War I, which was so ineffectual, led to World War I. Excuse me. The League of Nations was so ineffectual that it led to Germany going to war. Let me put it to you that way. Thank you for the call. 1-800-4, in World War II. That's what I meant to say. They put the reparations onto Germany, and they were very ineffectual. So we have the same situation now. You have diplomats who are unable to affect anything. And so we're very interested in what people will do. I don't expect to pepper a guest with questions that are so numerous that we're not going to get an answer out of them. Newt moves into second. Not impressive at all. I haven't any idea why this is happening, other than Perry has performed so abysmally. I mean, you know, I'm sorry to tell you, I have no idea why the Republicans would do this to themselves. I have no idea they would have a man like Newt Gingrich even running for the presidency after all these years. I wrote a book many years ago called The Political Zoo, and I was not too kind to Newt Gingrich because I don't think he should be the recipient of too much kindness, and I'll let it go at that. Sacramento, Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation of KSTE. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Mike, I was listening to your 37 points. Sorry, but that's just like the Ten Commandments, the truth to the truth. Every one of those things are right on. Nobody can deny it, period. End of conversation. It's that.
Right. Why not start with one of them, English only, in ballots and in government workplace? Why in the heck should we have a government putting out brochures in two or three languages? We are not a bilingual nation. And if illegal immigrants want to become citizens, let them get online with everybody else.
Mike, can I just make one point? I mean, I hate to say it. I don't want to be a pessimist. But to be honest with you, the truth of the matter is, before anything will ever change again in this country, there's going to probably have to be a ton of bloodshed. God knows that we may not even be around. I'm 42 years old, but that's the only way it's ever going to change now. We're just too deep into it, my friend. There has to be.
Well, you know something? I can't comment on that because we don't do that on radio. I read an awful lot of this in blog comments now, much more than I've ever seen in my life, where there's a certain hardcore that has basically given up on the process, and they actually believe that there's going to be such a horrendous thing as another American Revolution. God help us all, because as we can see from the Occupy movement, all it leads to is further disaster. Look at what those bums have achieved in these parks. Nothing but disease, degeneration, decadence, you name it. Everything bad has come out of the Occupy movement. Take a guess of what would happen if you added to that guns.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. We're going to go right to our guest in less than 30 seconds. Herman Cain is appearing on the Savage Nation, as he promised. He was on the show before in August, And we discussed Kane's experience as a CEO of many organizations. And he said, I've not only run small businesses and medium-sized businesses, saved businesses, and started businesses, I've actually made the sandwiches and made the pizzas, Kane told the Savage Nation. In terms of product, Michael Savage said, I'll take a pizza over a fiduciary instrument any day. Joining us now is Herman Kane, once again on the Savage Nation. Mr. Kane, it's a real honor.
Michael, you are a great friend, and I'm delighted to be with you.
Well, you know, your honesty and your character is shining through for reasons that I don't have to spell out. You're a very busy man. You've gone into the international spotlight. You're not doing much radio anymore, and I understand that you personally told your staffers you wanted to come on to the Savage Nation. Is that true?
That is absolutely true, and the reason is because you and your audience were so kind to me when I was on first. You didn't know that much about me. They didn't know that much about me, and I respect you as a patriot. I respect you as a professional, and I respect you as a man of integrity. And I said, yes, I wanted to be on Michael's show as soon as we could set it up.
That's beautiful. So let me ask you a blockbuster question.
Yes.
If someone else were chosen to run for the presidency, Mr. Kane, would you accept the VP slot?
It depends upon who's asking and the conditions under which they would like for me to do it. First, I would want to know clearly what my role would be. Secondly, if we are ideologically and idea-wise so far apart, I cannot do that because I believe that the vice president should be a spokesperson for the president. For example, Mitt Romney, with all due respect, he has a 59-point economic growth plan that's got all kind of stuff in it. I don't agree with that. So right now today, I could not be out there helping him promote his 59-point economic jobs plan. I couldn't do that. I like him as a businessman. If he gets it, I am going to support him. But I have to work with someone that I could compliment, not someone that wants to put me in a role that I would not want to do.
That's interesting because, again, Herman Kane, going into the third person, answers as directly as possible, given that we didn't rehearse this question. It's astounding to me what kind of... No, I mean, your answers are straight up. It's as though you and I are talking in a restaurant over a pizza. I mean, over a pizza. I'm asking a real question. I'm getting a real answer instead of double talk and footwork. Okay, so let's go to the next question that came into my mind that I think is a very important one. Given your background in mathematics and computer science, which I continue to boast about to people, you know, to this day, they don't know that you have a real degree in mathematics, a real degree in computer science, that you, Herman Kane, worked as a civilian employee of the Defense Department analyzing ballistics for the Defense Department. And when I read the elite snot noses on some of these shows are laughing at you and saying you're not smart, you know what I say to them on this show? Right. How come he can do things like that if he's not so smart? Most of these people couldn't do what you did in the military. I mean, for the military. So having said that, which cabinet post, let's say you're not picked for VP or president. God forbid, I wish you are. But let's say you're not. And someone says Herman Kane is so great, the people love him. We'd beg him to run a cabinet office for us. Which one do you think would fit for you?
Defense Department.
Yeah, I swear. I said that to my audience an hour ago. Mr. Kane, I swear to you, I said that.
And here's why, Michael. Here's why. I want to be in a position where I can make a difference. And now I would only accept it if the president asking me to do it would understand that, one, I don't want the priority to be on cutting. I want it to be on investing. Two, I want to upgrade one of the things that I want to invest in is our ballistic missile defense capable Aegis warships, and I want to double that fleet. Why? The world is not safer. And so I want to build our military, not tear it down, because the world is not safer. So that would be the one that I could be excited about to help the generals and the commanders on the ground to get what they need to do what they do best, and that is kick the you-know-what out of everybody in the world if something breaks out around in other parts of the world.
I felt that that would be, if in that position came around, that would be the number one selection, A, because of your mathematics background.
Yes.
And there's another reason. If I said it on the show, so I'll say it again, Mr. Kane. You probably didn't hear it. You were busy at another show or on a campaign trail. I said that if Mr. Kane walked amongst the troops as the Secretary of Defense, they would get a tingle up their spine because they would love him. They would love this man, and he would inspire confidence in the troops. I mean, this is the reality. So let's go to the next question. The other night there was a disaster for Mr. Perry. He drew a blank, which was embarrassing, and there's no point in making a joke of it.
Right.
Would you eliminate any departments if you were president, and which would they be, if any?
I wouldn't approach it that way. You know, he's trying to identify three departments. Here's how I would approach it. I would do an across-the-board cut of 10% of every agency except for defense. I would review that to see if we got the right priorities. Then each of my new cabinet heads, I would then ask them to find another 10% by doing a deep dive. You have to go into each department and find programs that are outdated, obsolete, or conflict with some of our other programs. Now, once we do that, some departments may be totally gone. But I don't want to make that judgment without looking down in the belly of each one of these. But I do believe we're going to find at least a 20% cut in total in that first year, because we're going to go at it the same way a businessman would go about cutting costs. So I would,
you know, Herman Cain, you and I agree on, I mean, our minds work in a very similar manner, because I, just before you came on the show, I read my 37-point manifesto, my own, from my own book. And in that book, I didn't call for cutting, eliminating any departments. I said, cut them all across the board, because that's how a businessman would approach it.
Yes, that would be step one. Step two, do a deep dive. That means that you've got to do the heavy lifting of saying, let's put every program on the table. What are the cost benefits of this program?
Mm-hmm.
If those cost benefits do not justify themselves, it is gone. That's how you go about doing that in business, and that's how we ought to be doing it in government. You know what, Michael? One of the reasons that, you know, each year the Government Accounting Office puts together a report identifying waste, fraud, abuse, duplication, and all that kind of stuff. They send it to Congress, and nothing ever happens. Why? Because if they are not trying to protect their pet program, they're trying to protect the pet programs of their friends. But guess what?
Mm-hmm.
I'll be a president with no friends, so I'm not going to try to protect anything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to make...
I know your time is extremely short, Mr. Cain, and I have this question. A lot of people ask, I said, what would you like to ask Mr. Cain? We had hundreds of people calling. The switchboards were jammed. One of the questions they all asked was about the UN. What would Herman Cain do with regard to the U.S. participation in the UN?
I would bring about an attitude adjustment with the United Nations. That means we are not going to compromise our sovereignty under any circumstances. Secondly, I would make sure that the UN understood that because we are the biggest contributor to the existence of the UN, we are going to change some of the rules that they use, you know, in terms of some of their practices. For example, I will not sit by and allow a pipsqueak potentate dictator to come to this country and insult our president. I don't care who it is. That makes absolutely no sense.
Mm-hmm.
We should be respected as a nation, even at the United Nations. And so I believe that there's a way to do that. In fact, I have talked to some people who have suggested how we can do that. We need an attitude adjustment with the United Nations. I don't want to say we want to get rid of it, but we need to have a change of attitude and change the way we deal with the United Nations.
I agree 100%, and I think that there could be a role for a UN if it was put in its place. And I think here comes the most important question, which is about jobs. Because people called and said, how would Herman Cain restore jobs in America? And we talked a bit about the exporting of jobs. We talked about Bill Clinton sending factories, letting China buy entire manufacturing facilities and bringing them to China. My answer was rather simplistic, but Donald Trump was on the show and agreed with the same principle. I said impose a tariff on goods from China. Now, do you have a position on this issue at this time?
Here's how I would bring jobs, keep jobs here. It starts with throwing out the current tax code because it is a mess. It works to our disadvantage. And this is why I proposed my 999 plan. Now, let's look at the first nine. This is where we level the playing field between U.S. manufactured goods, Chinese manufactured goods, to some extent, by the following. You take your sales as a business in the United States, and you're able to deduct purchases that you made from other U.S. companies. You're able to deduct capital expenditures. In other words, no depreciation. If it costs you $500,000 to buy a new piece of equipment, you can deduct it. And you can deduct net exports. In other words, you don't put embedded taxes into the cost of a car or a bicycle before you send it overseas, that makes our products much more competitive. We would be the most business-friendly country on the planet, Michael. This is how we deal with China, because then we'll be able to better compete against China and all of the other countries. As far as imposing tariffs, if we do my plan, we won't have to impose any special tariffs.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very interesting and very intriguing. The issue of jobs, of course, is most important to most voters, and I think the bread and butter issue is the one that will launch someone into the presidency or keep that individual from arriving there. And the jobs. I mean, that's the number one issue. The unemployment is catastrophic right now, as you well know. I think it's related to all of the issues that you just mentioned. Is there any overall comment, Mr. Kane, that you any concept that you would like to leave the Savage Nation audience with that would be significant in terms of your vision?
A Herman Cain presidency would first restore pride in being part of the greatest nation in the world. A Herman Cain presidency would put United back in the United States of America. Herman Cain would not try and divide us based upon class warfare. I will not divide us relative to race politics. I will unite us because it says United States of America. The other thing that Herman Cain will do, and I happen to believe that the power of my 999 plan is going to boost this economy, because we are going to remove this veil of uncertainty off of this economy so businesses can get excited about growing again. I'm about moving that shiny city on a hill that Reagan talked about back to the top of the hill where it belongs. And I will never be one to apologize for the greatness of this country. I have achieved my American dreams and then some. And I'm not doing this for me. I'm not doing this for the people who have already made it. I'm doing this for the children and the grandchildren.
And I believe every word you just said. Every word you just said is coming from you, from the honesty of Herman Cain. And you're the only candidate that I know of who's even talked about restoring the pride of America. It's the number one issue that's not being talked about, which is the collapse of the heart of America, because we've been beaten up so badly. And God in heaven, just the spirit, just lifting up the spirit would be enough to lift up the nation's economics. I'm sure you're right about that, and that's because you're a man of God. And I don't want to interject God into politics, but I know it's a big part in your life, and that's how you've been able to withstand the fires that you've been put through recently.
It is a big part, and the reason that I've been able to withstand those fires is because of my faith in God, my faith in myself, and my faith in this country. This is why I'm doing this, Michael, and I got to tell you, the encouragement that I get from people as I travel around this country, the encouragement that I get from the feedback that you get from your listeners, it basically says and reinforces every day the American people are sick and tired of politics as usual. That's why this businessman is appealing to them, because I'm not a politician. And the American spirit, that same American spirit, Michael, that started this country, that brought us through tough times, that same spirit has awakened here in this country. I don't care what you call it. Some people want to call it the Tea Party movement. I call it the citizen movement. And it is bigger, deeper, and more impactful than anybody thinks. The political class in Washington, D.C. is having nightmares because Herman Cain is doing so well. And that's because the American people have awakened and they are not going back to sleep.
Oh, I agree with you. And I said on my show, when you were here, Cain is able. And I thought that was a good, catchy phrase. And somebody's been running those ads on my website, paying for them, because it's a heck of a phrase and it's turning out to be true. One other note, Mr. Cain, despite what people are rumoring, I will not accept the chairmanship of the FCC when you're president.
Well, would you be press secretary for a week?
I would be press secretary for you for one day only. That's the first day. That's only the first day of your office. I would only agree to it for one day. I could never take it for more than that.
I may take you up on that offer, because between you and Boyce, I want you to shake them up and give them a new attitude adjustment.
oh, would I shake up the press if they were ever in my room? You know, Mr. Cain, you remember the comedian Jimmy Durante many, many years ago, back in the 50s?
Yes,
I'm going to leave the listeners and you with one thought, because this one is great. Jimmy Durante said, "You better be nice to all of them on the way up." And you better be nice to all the people you meet on the way up, because you'll meet them all on the way down.
He's so right. He was so right. Michael, I've enjoyed it, my friend.
Thank you very much, and God bless you. Good luck with the run. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation to take your calls and comments right here.
Savage.
The Savage Nation, as the ancient Greek philosopher said, it's good to be alive in interesting times, or good to live in interesting times, and boy, are these interesting times. And Herman Cain is a very interesting man. Moreover, he is exactly what you hear is what you get. This is why he likes me and I like him. It's as simple as that. I like Herman Cain. He came on the show and he didn't have to. He could have ignored me the way a certain female candidate did after she did very well with us. Because she didn't listen to Jimmy Durante, who said, you better be nice to all the people you meet on the way up, because you're going to meet them all on the way back down. Anyway, the last time Mr. Cain was on the show, he acknowledged that Romney ran financial investment firms. And this is in the World Net Daily article. Savage said Cain, nevertheless, is the only candidate who's aware of who produced a product or service that is of any value whatsoever. Then Savage quipped, in terms of a product, I'll take a pizza over a fiduciary instrument any day. That was then. This is now. So here's the question. Can you believe that I said to you without any prompting, we didn't rehearse it, you have to take me on my word, that if he were to pick a department, it would be defense, and he said the same thing? I was shocked. Because it makes sense. I mean, the guy makes sense, and it would be great for America. It would never happen. In a million years, it wouldn't happen because the defense contractors would make sure, certainly never, ever got that job. Never. It would have to be another insider who they control and who would ever absolutely not cut any of the contracts that they don't want cut. So, you know, that's the horrible reality of it. I hope he becomes president because he would have a little more influence over the character and mood of America in that regard. And it could happen. Don't say it couldn't happen. It could happen. Remember that Obama was unknown prior to the last election. He was virtually unknown. And he was engineered into the position of a senator as a result of dirty tricks of David Axelrod, who smeared his number one competitor, was running ahead of him in the polls. And then Axelrod smeared that candidate with sex allegations. He dropped out of the race, and Alan Keyes then ran against Obama, and Obama won by like 50, 60 points because Alan Keyes, as good a man as he was not equipped to run against him. So that was how he became the president. But the fact of the matter is he was unknown. Bill Clinton was unknown, by the way, before he was elected. So there are many cases, even modern ones, many situations in American history, where an unknown individual, a rather unknown individual, comes out of nowhere, so to speak, and becomes president. And by the way, that's very American. Remember, as a son of an immigrant myself, I was told when I was a little kid, I remember it to this day in the Bronx. They were all immigrants. I was first generation. They all said, you know, in America, anyone could become president. I didn't even know what it meant. I didn't believe it. Well, guess what? In America, anyone could become president. Herman Cain would represent the fact that a man could make it on his own and become president. And the American people would love him once he became president. Never mind the naysayers and the mudslingers. They'd get in line pretty quick. As far as him not accepting. The news he made today, I think, is that he said he would not accept the VP slot for someone he didn't agree with philosophically. That could only mean he wouldn't accept the slot for Mr. Romney, VP on the Romney. As far as him saying he'd like to appoint me to be the press secretary for Herman Cain for the first week of his campaign, the more I think about it, the more fun that might be. Boy, would it be like Edgar G. Robinson and Little Caesar coming out on the stage. Would I crack the whip on the Washington press corps? I don't think they'd ever get over it. What fun.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Now, here are some of the questions we've been talking about on the Savage Nation. Before he came on the show, I asked, what should I ask Herman Cain? You asked, what was the big announcement he was going to make? I'll ask, would you vote for a candidate who refused to come on the Savage Nation? Ha-ha. What would Cain need to have said in order to have gotten you to vote for him for president if you were opposed to him? Would you vote for a ticket in which he was the vice president, or the candidate for the vice presidency? And if Cain were a member of a presidential cabinet, which position do you think he would be best in? Defense? Commerce? Do you believe that Cain can defeat Obama is the biggest question. Let's turn it around. If Herman Cain gets the nomination, who do you think he should choose as a vice presidential candidate? Ha-ha. Have you only recently become a Herman Cain supporter? If so, why? What made you make the change? As a candidate, what do you see Herman Cain's main advantage? And as a candidate, what's his main disadvantage? Those are pretty easy questions, right? Here was an announcement that we made earlier today. Herman Cain expected to make major announcement today on the Michael Savage radio show. Nationally syndicated The Michael Savage Show announces that presidential hopeful Herman Cain will be on the live radio program today and is expected to make a major announcement on air. Mr. Cain is scheduled to be on air with Dr. Savage today. This ends a week in which his so-called accusers have publicly come forward, and Cain has chosen the nationally syndicated Michael Savage Show to make this public announcement. The Michael Savage Show is ranked as the third largest syndicated talk show in the U.S. It's number two in webcasting. So that's the announcement, and now on to the show itself. Well, let me begin a quote from Jimmy Durante, the comedian. Years ago, there was a comedian named Jimmy Durante who said, "You'd better be nice to all the people you meet on the way up, because you're going to meet them all on the way down." Now, I would think that Michelle Bachmann should have learned this, but she didn't. There are others who do know this because they intuitively have humility, right?
I've got news for Congress. We are not done yet. In the weeks ahead, they're going to get a chance to vote on whether we give a tax cut to virtually every small business owner in America, including 900,000 women. These are folks who run the restaurants and stores and beauty shops and other small businesses that create two-thirds of all new jobs. There's no reason they shouldn't get a break. The American people are with me on this. And Republicans in Congress should be with me, too, because it's right for the country. Instead, they're spending time focusing on how to turn back the clock. Instead of figuring out how to put more Americans back to work, they've been trying to figure out how to take away preventive care that is covered under the Affordable Care Act. Instead of making life easier for women in this country, they want to let insurance companies go back to charging higher prices just because you're a woman. Instead of working to boost our economy, they're out there spending time trying to defund Planned Parenthood and prevent millions of women from getting basic health care that they desperately need. Pap smears and breast exams.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to americaisrising.com, 800-255-4199, americaisrising.com. And now on to the latest news. The Occupy protests are out of control. Shootings, death, disease, TB. What else do you need to know about these radical lunatics? The question is, where is our government? The answer is, we have government anarchy. There is no government. And that's why we have such distaste for government. On MichaelSavage.com, 6 weeks on the bestseller list, Abuse of Power. Buy it for the holidays. Get a free chapter today by going to my website. Man shot to death near Occupy Oakland camp. How's that for peace and love? Muslims to protest Christian prayer event in their town. Did you hear that? Of Dearborn, Michigan? The Muslims don't like the Christians praying near them. They think it's an attack on them. How do you like that for paranoia? Fake Tea Party leader attacks Cain, supports Beltway Newt. That's somebody who runs some Tea Party. Never heard of him. Tuberculosis breaks out at Occupy Atlanta. I don't know what Jesse Jackson's doing there. He should have worn a gauze mask to protect them from him. I don't mean from TB. They could have picked up motor mouth. MMD, motor mouth disease, very dangerous. Man fatally shot at Occupy Burlington, Vermont protest. Peace and love. China is Iran's new best friend. Chinese are supplying nuclear material. Can you believe this to Iran? Penn State coach skipping game after threats. He's the one who testified that he saw Sandusky sodomizing a boy. Now they're blaming him for it? Unbelievable. What else is on MichaelSavage.com? 11-11-11. That's today. 11-11-11. Is it good luck? Let us know. Has it been good luck for you? Half of women in Afghan jails are charged with moral crimes by the psychos. The EU has blocked release of a documentary about what's being done to them for fear that they'll offend the Taliban. Is the UN ready to regulate the internet? Maybe. See the article on MichaelSavage.com. Freddie Mac asks for $6 billion more after losing $4.4 billion. Well, these are some of the terrible stories today, and it's not getting better. Where is our leader? Well, he's doing his leading stuff, staying in the sidelines, and traveling to Bali at the end of the week. All this and more today on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I want to give you a snapshot of my life, how boring it really is. On Saturday, I try to get an outboard motor that I have on the back of a runabout running. And an old friend of mine, a Jaguar mechanic I know for, 30 years, we ran into each other again in an auto show a year ago. So he came over. Now, this is a two-year-old Yamaha 20 horsepower, but because the gas got old, it didn't start a year ago. Then we restarted it, and it wouldn't start again. So I bought a new battery. We put that in. That took us an hour. To get the thing running, but she keeps conking out when we reduce it to idle if we don't put it on a fast idle. So I just shut the thing down after letting it run for an hour and put it back up on the ramp because it's not nice enough weather to run it anyway. That was Saturday. Now, Sunday, yesterday, there were small craft advisories on San Francisco Bay. And I know better than to go out in a big powerboat in small craft advisory, but I wanted to get my merit badge in foul weather because, you know, no matter how, let's say, windy it is on a bay, it's still not the open ocean. It's nothing. So I arranged to go out with a guy who bamboozled me into telling me he was once, many years ago, in the Dutch Navy. Could you believe this? Nice enough guy. I knew him through some people. He had gone out with me one time before. He was a bit of a nervous Nelly. So I figured let him crew on the boat. Normally, I only go out with the dog because I don't like to talk with anyone on a boat. Now, I keep my boat like a model ship. The rails are varnished. The stainless steel is gleaming. Everything is perfect on my boats because I like a boat to be perfect. So I go out with this guy and I give him a lecture on exactly how to what he's expected to do when I'm docking. Remember, I'm up on the flybridge and I can't be on the deck at the same time. So I say to him, I'm going to call him John. I say, John, here's what you do. When I back her into the dock, you step off and you tie the stern line on first. I will then use the bow thruster and bring the bow around. And then I'll, you know, throw you a bow line. You'll bring a bow line down from the center, which you've tied. Yes, yes, I understand. I pull up to the dock in a fairly choppy wind, and I see something's going wrong. Nothing is right. I'm yelling. I'm screaming. The guy's not using the two-way radio. I can't get in touch with him. I look down. All of the lines that he tried to attach are in the water. That's number one. Number two, he tied a center line on. That's all we had. So blah, blah, blah. After screaming and yelling, I see we're tied up a little. I finally come off the flybridge to help correct it. And you know what he says to me? I think that I may have caused you some damage. I said, what? What happened? I figured maybe I scuffed the dock or something. You know what this idiot did? He took the line. These are big, thick, heavy lines that you tie up. This is a 40-ton boat that you tie up against the dock. Instead of running a line through a cleat out onto the dock, he wrapped it around a stainless steel rail, which I didn't know, and it broke the stainless steel rail off of my boat. Can you believe this? And then the guy has the nerve to say to me, I'm not sure I actually did it. I went ballistic, screaming, are you at blah, blah, blah. So then I calmed down, removed the rail. It took a good hour to get the rail off. I had broke off half the screws unscrewing them. I got a 10-foot section, and I'm going to show you how beautiful this country really is when you get down to the working class man. I want to show you what goes on with boatsmanship. I mean, most guys have captains who do all of this. I like to have my hands into all of it. It gives me a sense of reality. I just happened 2 weeks ago to have bought a new cordless DeWalt screwdriver because there's a bit of an eddy in me. I grew up fixing things in my dad's shop, and I like to use tools on a mile basis. I bought the sweetest tool set I've ever seen with new bits. I had no idea why I was buying it. Well, it was for yesterday. So now there's about 12, 14 screws that have to come out, right? In addition to the stanchion that broke, there were four others that were screwed in. So in unscrewing the stainless steel screws, about 6, 7 of them, the heads broke off and the screws got stuck in the wood, if you know what I'm talking about. Then the last two screws, I couldn't get the screwdriver into it. I had to pull them out by wrench. I had to yank them out by wrench. Luckily, I'm a little handy. So I got the rail off. Now, that's step one. Now I call 5 different people. Do you know anyone who can fix stainless steel without ruining it? Because it's only a 15-degree bend. Everyone says, yeah, you got to go to Werner's Welding in Sausalito, one of the old-timers on the dock. His dad was a welder. Well, guess what? I brought the iron down in my car to my good friends at List Marine. They're the greatest mechanics around. And they held the rail for me because Werner wasn't in. And then he called me later. He says, is this the Michael Savage? I said, yes. I never met him. He says, I've loved your show from the beginning. I've listened to you back since the early days. He said, you know what? I'm leaving on vacation tomorrow. I go away every year this time. He said, but I'll fix your stainless steel the best I can today. I'll get it done today. I just want to show you what good people there are out there. Let's make it political. Remember 6 months ago, there was a man who built the driving force behind the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. And he was a major operative in cybersecurity for America. And he was found wandering around in the streets of Washington, D.C., and then his body was found thrown in a dumpster in Delaware. Remember, in a landfill? Notice how that's been swept under the rug. Can you believe you're living in a free country anymore? Do you believe you're living in a free country anymore? When that story, that death, that man with his prominence has been swept under the rug, you are living in a banana republic. If whoever killed him can get away with that, they can kill any one of us and get away with it, because your mind is distracted by the filth, by the pornography and the sports that they force down your throat like geese being fattened up for your liver. And so therefore, I could not believe that this story had been dropped. So what I did was I fictionalized that character in my book, Abuse of Power, okay? So I'm going to read to you that little setting. So Jack is in his room working on a clock to calm his mind down. Over the years, Jack's interest had expanded from watches to clocks. His father said he'd move backward because clocks were larger and easier to repair. But Jack loved the sound of the bells when they struck on the half and on the hour. Winding one particular wall clock seemed to reset his mind. It was his favorite, a walnut German Berliner made by Kienzel in 1880. The brass face was embossed with a winged angel, the pendulum driven by an 8-day spring-wound movement that played the Westminster chimes on the half hour. Jack often smiled at the irony of being banned from entering Britain as he listened to the harmonious gongs. Okay, so he's working on his clocks. So we're moving along now to page 121. And now he's working on a particular watch. And the watch he's working on is a Hamilton Gilbert, which is, interestingly enough, I went and bought one on the Internet, which broke because I overwhelmed it. I had to send it back to the clockmaker. So he's working on this Hamilton Gilbert circa 1952, which was a very popular pocket watch at the time that was often given to employees after a certain number of years of service, blah, blah, blah. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. He's working on his clocks. It was nearly 3 a.m. and the sound startles him when his cell phone rings. Who would be calling him at this time of morning? Setting the watch down, Jack fumbled the phone from his pocket, checked the screen, and saw that the number was blocked. He pressed the receive button, put it on speaker, and placed the phone on the desk. Hello? There was static on the line, followed by a moment of silence. Then a slurred but familiar voice said, Hatfield, sat you? Bob Copeland. He sounded as if he might be drunk. Hatfield, you there? It was unusual for Copeland to be calling him directly like this. With his penchant for secrecy, their normal mode of communication was a text message, like earlier tonight, and Jack had no doubt that those messages went through half a dozen encryption filters before they reached his phone. Yeah, Bob, it's me. What's going on? Are you okay? What? The static flared up again, and if Copeland said anything more, Jack missed it. Bob, did you hear me? Can't find my other shoe. Where the hell is my shoe? Definitely drunk or even drugged, although Copeland had never struck Jack as a big fan of pharmaceuticals. Listen to me, Bob. Tell me where you are. Are you at home? More static. Bob? Upstream, Jackie boy. definitely upstream. Got to get out of here. Got to look after the twins. Jack had no idea what Copeland was talking about. But if he wasn't at home, he definitely shouldn't be driving. Whatever you do, Jack told him, don't get behind the wheel. You hear me? Leave your car where it is and call yourself a cab. What? Call a cab, Bob. I mean it. Promise me you won't drive. No driving, Copeland murmured, his voice sounding distant as if he lowered the phone. Can't find my damn shoe. Jack was about to insist he let him pick him up when the line clicked and the phone went dead. Jack sighed. He knew Copeland and, anyway, you know how this one ends, don't you? Well, I wrote the Copeland character into the book because I am shocked that we live in a nation where a man so high up in the defense establishment who had been working on American cybersecurity could obviously be assassinated and his body unceremoniously thrown into a dumpster, and the media completely ignores the story. We are living in a banana republic. There are no journalists anymore. This story should have been pursued by 10 journalists, let alone 1,000.
Savage.
We spoke with Herman Cain today, and he would say that the threat of big government really can't be ignored. We all know that government needs to be downsized. And with Rick Perry's latest blank at the most recent GOP presidential debate, I thought it would be a good idea to speak with Tad DeHaven, who is a budget analyst for Cato Institute and the co-editor of DownsizingGovernment.org. Good idea. Tad DeHaven, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. It's great to talk to you.
So first, give my audience, the Savage Nation, a brief overview of how you would downsize the federal government.
Well, the first thing you have to ask yourself is what's the proper role of the federal government? And that's what we've done at the Cato Institute. We've used the Constitution as our guide, and we've done what the president said he was going to do and what a lot of Democrats and Republicans say they're going to do. And we've gone line by line, program by program, agency by agency, through the federal budget, and we've applied a constitutional test. And just a practical, realistic test as to, you know, what does the federal government need to be doing? I think there's this sort of misperception out there in the public that everything the federal government does now, it's been doing for 200 years, and that's simply not the case. And so what we've done is we've created a website, downsizinggovernment.org, where we've gone through these departments. You can check out everything from the Department of Agriculture to the one that Rick Perry supposedly forgot, the Department of Energy, and we go through the various programs agencies. We come up with cuts. We explain why you need the cuts. It just takes some hard work, and it takes the willingness to go through and find where the bodies are buried in the federal budget and sort of get your hands dirty. But at the end of the day, you start to see some common patterns and common themes, and that you have a tremendous amount of incompetence, and you have a lot of stuff that exists because particular interests ask for it. And the American people, look, when they come home from work at night, men and women want to spend time with their families, have dinner. They don't have time to go through the federal budget or perhaps be upset about farm subsidies or things of that nature. And so their voice isn't heard in Washington. The voices that are heard in Washington, I say this as somebody who spent time in the United States Senate, are of the special interest and those out there clamoring for a handout from their neighbor. And, why we are taking this project and trying to get it out there to people is to give them some knowledge. And as we saw with the election and the big spectacle of the Tea Party and basically giving Republicans a second chance to go in and cut spending after, quite honestly, under Bush and Republican control, they sent spending through the roof. The Tea Party folks said, get in there and cut spending. The problem is you have to be more specific with members of Congress. And it's not enough just to wave a sign and say, cut spending. The politicians in Washington count on the people's ignorance. And what the downsizing website does is it allows people to have an understanding of how their money's being spent, where it's going, and why it should stop. And we hope that folks utilize that and start to compete with the special interests in Washington. And it's no easy task, and I'm not going to sit here, Michael, and tell you that I don't understand what we're up against, believe me, again, I spent my time in the U.S. Senate. I know what we're up against. But that being said, you know, there's a silver lining in this recession and this economic downturn, and I think that silver lining is that people have less faith in their government, less faith in politicians. You hear a lot of mainstream press people talk about, bemoaning the fact that people have less faith in their government. That's healthy. That's getting back to our revolutionary roots, our early constitutional roots, and our Constitution reflected that mistrust in government. So you had to put, basically some shackles on it, and unfortunately those shackles have been loosened over the past 100 years or so. But there's no reason that we can't strengthen those shackles once again. Because quite honestly, we have to do it. The country simply can't afford to continue on the trajectory that it's on. The American people, and again, this is all part of the education process, they need to have an understanding, at least a basic understanding of these various programs. They have to understand where the money's being spent. They need to appreciate that you can't just eliminate waste, fraud, and abuse, as a lot of Democrats and Republicans are constantly promising. You have to go after the big-ticket programs, and oftentimes those are the programs that most people benefit and depend on. That's Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and I would also include defense spending. We spend an awful lot of money taking care of the defense needs of our wealthy allies. And, a lot of the Republicans that like to quote the Founding Fathers when criticizing the federal welfare state seem to want to turn a blind eye to the fact I think the Founding Fathers would be appalled that we have military bases all over the world, and we've become this sort of global RoboCop. And, as a historical precedent, I think we're, moving down the same sort of path that Rome went. And until both parties recognize that whether it's welfare programs or warfare programs, the federal government's overstepped its bounds, and the only solution to our problems going forward and to, head off the disaster that we're facing, is to downsize the federal government and return it as close as we possibly can to that which was envisioned by our very intelligent founding fathers.
In what ways has President Obama expanded government?
Well, the president has just about every area that you possibly can. And it's all been done under the guise of jobs and economic growth in the future, whether it's high-speed rail or more money for education. And I think, the fundamental flaw in this line of thinking is the government spending is not a free lunch. The government can certainly do things. It put a man on the moon. It can technically create jobs. But every dollar that the federal government spends is one less dollar that the private sector has to spend. And I think that sort of points to the ridiculousness of the so-called stimulus attempts by the federal government. The notion that you can help the private sector, save the private sector, get the private sector going by taking money out of the private sector, and worse, borrowing, and therefore requiring the private sector to pony up even more money in the future. And it's a demonstrable failure, and that's no surprise to people in my neck of the woods. But again, the solution is to shrink the government, and not just target high-speed rail because that's what the president wants to do, or to target Solyndra because that's a black eye for a Democratic administration. Republicans should be targeting Solyndra because the federal government has no business subsidizing businesses to begin with. And unfortunately, as we're seeing right now, and as these letters have been surfacing in the media, a lot of the people, a lot of the Republicans criticizing the administration for Solyndra and these energy subsidies have actually behind the scenes been groveling to the Department of Energy to send the bacon home to their district, to their favorite companies. And that hypocrisy has to end if we're going to get anything under control. You can't just target Acorn. You have to target the programs that fund Acorn. You can't just target Planned Parenthood. You have to target the programs that fund Planned Parenthood. And that's the problem I see still with Republican politicians is they largely want to use these scandals and examples of spending, egregious sort of spending to score political points, again, instead of moving us in the direction of a more limited government and sort of fueling that discussion of what is the proper role of government.
Do you actually think any of these GOP presidential candidates will do what really needs to be done to downsize our federal government?
So far, I've really only seen one plan that, again, gets to my complaint that the GOP politicians aren't specific enough. And Ron Paul's the only one who has put out a really aggressive plan to eliminate entire federal departments. And that was the amusing moment the other night in the debate with the exchange after Perry flubbed the question of what three departments he would eliminate. Ron Paul held up his hand and said, I've already proposed five. You have a pretty smooth-talking governor from Massachusetts who's probably the best politician, certainly the best speaker, the best presenter. But here's a man who provided some of the ideological background, philosophical background, for Obamacare. And that's who the Republicans want to be their standard bearer. Yes, he might be the most convincing to the average voter because he talks nice and he looks good. But at the end of the day, if you get 4 years of Romney and the mentality that gave Romney care, are we that much better off? And, I would simply point to the George Bush years. We talked about earlier about, Obama wanting to spend money on everything, whether it's high-speed rail or education. Well, President Bush and his Republican Congresses spent money on all these things, too, set records for spending. It just happens to be that, and this is somewhat of a miracle, Obama's actually just been George Bush on steroids. And so, I think that's what Republicans have to ask themselves is, do they want to go with Mr. Electable and have more of the status quo, big government light, or do you want to start pushing the boundary of ideas, and do you truly want limited government? And maybe at the end of the day, that's what we're going to find out, is if for all the talk about cutting spending and smaller government, people perhaps are more comfortable with somebody like Mitt Romney, who's going to say, I won't touch your Medicare, I won't touch your Social Security, instead of those people who think outside of the box and say, hey, why don't we look at Social Security private accounts and things like that, because younger generations are taking it on the chin, are going to get completely hosed to pay for those programs.
Well, Tad DeHaven, thanks for joining us today on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, thanks for talking to me, and thanks for introducing your readers and listeners to downsizinggovernment.org.
This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Have to say that who's had the largest effect on the whole planet without us really paying attention across the board and everywhere is the entire banking industry and their disregard for the people that they're supposed to be working for. So the way the bankers have kind of toppled the way money is distributed and taken most of it into their own hands is as good as Stalin or Hitler and the evil guys that you guys have.
Got
and they're not heroes.
Exactly.
They're just people that really had a huge effect on the way the world's operating.
Yeah, come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now.
Why Jesus came to love me so, he looked beyond all my faults and saw my needs. Thank you.
That's Herman Cain concluding a national press club appearance by singing about Jesus, which is beautiful. Now you understand why they hate him in the Republican and Democrat Party. The atheists and the big government types are terrified that he's actually going to excite the populist masses, which he's already done. And the more people see of him, the more they're going to like him. Because he actually says things. He doesn't parse the truth. And he is certainly different than Romney in so many profound ways. That's why the Republicans are afraid of him. So I think he is able, and I think he's able to win. I only wish him the best, and I wish him his health. I wish that the Christians get behind him. I hope the Jews get behind him. And I hope anyone of any other religion or anti-religion gets behind Cain, because he can save America from what it is. Now, speaking about, by the way, who liked my idea of beating the bicycle gangs with the wheelchair coalition? Not one call on that. It's interesting. There's a man named John Corzine. Corzine used to be the chief of Goldman Sachs. If you remember, Corzine then became a U.S. senator. He bought that seat. As you well know, it's a very it's actually a very cheap seat to buy, the U.S. Senate. It's a very, you never asked yourself why somebody would spend $50 or $100 million to make $200,000 a year, did you? People could never figure that out. We figured it out here in San Francisco when Dianne Feinstein fought so hard, spending upwards of $50 million to get a $200,000 a year job. I mean, does it take a genius to figure out why? That's how you pillage. You invest $50 million and then you can pillage the system as the head of your state while telling everybody that you're for the poor. So Goldman Sachs produces John Corzine to become a U.S. senator. Then he leaves the Senate in New Jersey and he goes to run a company called MF Global, a brokerage firm. It now files for bankruptcy, and it is one of the 10 biggest bankruptcies ever. Did you know this? John Corzine ran a brokerage firm named MF Global. They just filed Chapter 11. 10 largest bankruptcies in the U.S. now includes MF Global. Okay, one, Lehman Brothers, $691 billion. Two, Washington Mutual, $327 billion. You know how much of that money was stolen by people who set up the Ponzi schemes who were still spending it? And by the way, I know some of the people who took down the money out of Washington Mutual with another bank. And I'll tell you their names. I've told it before. They act as the biggest liberals in the world. They love the poor. They're funding the Occupy movement. They fund the ACLU. They stole the money. They're just the worst people on the planet. Washington Mutual went bankrupt, $327 billion. WorldCom, $103 billion. GM, $91 billion, CIT Group, $80 billion, Enron, $65 billion, Conseco, $61 billion bankruptcy, and now MF Global is $41 billion as of September 30th and rising. Chrysler went bankrupt at $39 billion. Thomberg Mortgage went bankrupt at $36 billion, and PG&E went bankrupt at $36 billion. But now MF Global is at $41 billion, run by none other than ex-New Jersey Senator John Corzine and former Goldman Sachs Chairman John Corzine. Okay? It's amazing. Just amazing. I'm watching reruns and the new season of a show I didn't originally like called Boardwalk Empire. I've actually come to like it a lot. I've gotten used to, I forget his name, the skinny guy from The Sopranos. What's his name? Yeah, Buscemi. I didn't like him in the lead role, Buscemi. But he actually is starting to grow on me. He plays the part so well, and you do see the deft hand of Scorsese everywhere. It's very well written. The violence is extremely graphic. I wouldn't recommend it. Most of you don't get HBO. That's fine. How many times I've canceled the subscription or wanted to, and then I don't, and I'm too lazy to do it. I hope and keep up with all of it. Anyway, I'm watching it. So it's about a corrupt guy who's running Atlantic City in the period of the 1920s, as played by Buscemi, whatever his name, sorry. And it's all about politics and money and bootlegging. In other words, they were the drug dealers of our time. But they made so much money in bootlegging that they became mayors, governors, presidents even. They bought presidents. They put presidents in office. The bootleggers did, as you well know. The Kennedys are famous for having done that. That's a well-known fact. Of course, you don't want to know that. But the Democrat Party is rife with such connections and corruption. So here we see Boardwalk Empire as spelled out on this HBO series. And it's all about a corrupt politician in Atlantic City whose fingers reach all the way up to the White House of that time. And he has a case removed from a local jurisdiction in New Jersey to the federal government. where he has implanted the attorney general. Sound familiar to you? So his case comes up to the attorney general. They move it up to him. Then the attorney general gets visited by a senator who says to him, you're pillaging the Veterans Affairs Department, and you've got to stop pillaging it. And if you don't stop pillaging it, things are going to happen. We need you to go tougher on this New Jersey guy, blah, blah, blah. And they then decide to put in a real prosecutor against the Buscemi character. The point I'm making is it doesn't seem like very much has changed, has it, in the United States of America. Just substitute something else for alcohol, and you'll see fundamentally it's the same country as it was in the 1920s, with a major difference being that we don't have the core of patriotism that we had then.
Savage.